whenever I was first starting to wholesale, I would be so scared to just call sellers back. Like they would call me off of a postcard or call me off of the website or whatever. And I would just sit there and think and try to figure out what I was going to say for like 20 or 30 minutes before I would even get on the phone. And it was just debilitating almost.
This is the Self-Storage Podcast, where we share the knowledge and skills from the industry's leading investors, developers, and operators to help you launch and grow your self-storage business. Your host, Scott Myers, over the past 18 years, has acquired, developed, converted, and syndicated nearly 5 million square feet of self-storage nationwide with the help of his incredible team at selfstorageinvesting.com. who has helped thousands of people achieve greatness in self-storage.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Self-Storage Podcast. I am your host, Scott Myers, and today our special guests are Nick and Catherine Zago. So, Nick, Catherine, how are you both today?
Very good. Very good, Scott.
Good.
Well, it's so good to see you two. It's better when we're in the same room together, or better when we're on the mission field together, but we'll take this. And I'm just so glad to have you two here and that we found the time to be able for you two to, well, come on and share your story as well as some of the cool things that you're doing in self-storage. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to you. Can you tell Storage Nation a little bit about yourselves and how you got to the place where you are right now? And talk just a little bit more about what you're doing right now in today's marketplace.
Yeah, so right now, so I'm Nick. I'm 24 years old. I got started in real estate whenever I was about 18, 19 years old. And so initially, whenever I graduated high school, I wanted to just follow in my father's footsteps. So he was an elevator mechanic. He makes very good money doing what he's doing. He makes over $50 an hour. And he calls it the golden handcuffs. So ultimately, I thought that I didn't know anything else. Like my parents, they had rental properties. I got to work on them and I got to do all of the hard labor and fixing toilets and mowing grass and going and scooping snow in the wintertime. But I never got paid for it. I never saw any of the money. So at the time, I really didn't think, well, it was that great of a thing. And so as I graduated high school, I wanted to just get a W-2 job. And I started being an electrician. So as soon as I graduated, I was, let's see here, I'm trying to think about the timeline of it all. I graduated in May and I started being an electrician. I did that for like 6 months, and I was also doing school full time. So I was doing college, trying to work, and I did this for about a semester, and I realized, oh my gosh, like this is way too hard, way too much. This is totally silly. And I was a good student. I was top 10 in my class, and I decided I'm just gonna go full time into real estate. I was still living with my parents, so I thought, for me, there's no other better time. I don't have hardly any bills. I get a roof over my head. I have money regardless. And I should say I don't need a lot of money. And so I decided at the, basically November of 2018. Is that right, Hannah? Yeah. November 2018, I decided to quit my full-time job. I quit school and I was like, no turning back, right? So they talk about burning the ships. I burned the ships. There was no going back and getting my job. And I could have gone back to college, but you know, it was just silly. I would have had to wait a whole nother semester. So I ended up buying a course for $5,500. Didn't have that money at all. Put it on a credit card. And from there, I learned from Tom Kroll on how to wholesale real estate. So took me about 6 months to actually do my first deal, and I learned some lessons along the way. I got some earnest money taken from me. I didn't close some deals before that, but I just kept trying. And the first deal that I ever did, it was I assigned a contract for $1,000. So it didn't make a lot of money, but it was like, oh my gosh, it's a proof of concept. Like, this actually works. So from there, once I had that faith and understanding, okay, this is how the process goes. Afterwards, within the first that first time frame, it took me 6 months, and then that next 12 months, I did 10 deals in the first 12 months. So there was a lot of time. You know, they talk about the exponential growth factor. That was me, where I was learning, trying to figure it out, and then all of a sudden, figure it out, and we just go from there. So at that point, we were doing well. Catherine, I had asked her to quit her job, so you could probably fill in on that.
Talking about burning ships, you burned mine. Well, where I fit into it is I had always wanted to be a pediatric physical therapist, and so I had two part-time jobs in physical therapy. I was in college. I had 1 year left to get my degree, and this handsome young man, who were high school sweethearts, I don't think we said, so we've been together for a long time, he convinced me to drop out of college and to quit both of my jobs and to come help him full-time because he was so busy. So I did. We weren't engaged. We weren't married yet or anything, but I have always just had so much faith in him and what he was doing, and I just knew we were going to get married anyways, and I knew that I wanted to help him be a part of the business. So I quit my jobs, dropped out of college, and we started together and started helping.
Okay, Catherine, so I just have to ask, what did your family think of this fine, young, handsome man who persuaded you to quit both of your jobs and drop out of college to follow his dream?
My mom wasn't thrilled. My whole family, they were pretty confused because he hadn't even been doing it a year yet. So it was really that proof of concept no one really saw but us. His parents weren't even on board with me quitting my job in college, nor him not pursuing after his father's footsteps. So it felt like both of our families were stacked against us. But I feel like all those times, it's really laid a good foundation early on for our relationship and now marriage, of just us two kind of against the world type thing. And no, they weren't happy about it, but I really think that they saw our love and support that we've had for each other. And they eventually, obviously, became fully on board. But no, they weren't happy to begin with. They're very against us both.
Well, Nick, you said at the top of our time together here that this seems so surreal after listening to our podcast, but we don't just allow anybody to come on to this podcast, and it has to be pretty special individuals. And so for you to take that risk and that chance of not following in your father's footsteps and to persuade your bride to be to do the same, for both of you to essentially burn the ships and take it, that big leap of faith, if you will. And that risk, I mean, that's why you two are here, and that's why we are so thankful to have you as part of our mastermind as well. And, fear stops more would-be successful entrepreneurs than all other factors combined. So, hey, can you speak to that and, how you really overcame that fear, or was there any? Were you just confident enough that this is where you were being led to go and felt strong enough? Or, tell us a little bit about, tell Storage Nation a little bit about your thought process and how you kind of navigated through that. Because let's face it, you did start out with one, and some people never take up to the, get up to the plate and take a swing, and you got up and you hit a triple. You got three the first time on, you're looking at three more, so you'll have six facilities within 1 year. That's a pretty sizable accomplishment.
No, there is definitely fear. And I remember Catherine, probably, I know Catherine remembers because she reminds me of it often.
I just remember those early days of you sitting in your parents' office, and we would sit and talk and pray for, it felt like hours, which actually sometimes it was, if you had to have a hard conversation and to get you to work up the courage just to call someone back to tell them you had to cancel a contract or trying to get a lower price. And I'm just so proud of you and how far you've come.
Well, it takes a team. We build a team around us, and I am certainly thankful for my wife and a teammate as well. Yes, fear is a big thing to overcome, and it's great to have a support staff behind. And I didn't really have a whole lot of that in the beginning. It was a little bit of the opposite. It was more of I would go out and put out a lot of offers and create a whole bunch of messes, and Christina would follow behind me with the pooper scooper and pick up the pieces and the messes and put the processes in place. And so, you know, as fear turns to, I don't know if it's a bravado or, you know, less fear and going out and doing that, it has been a blessing for the two of us to be able to do business together and to build several businesses together, and certainly couldn't have done it without an incredible partner. And so it's just great to see that in you two as well, the complementary skills that you both have.
Whenever I was first starting to wholesale, I would be so scared to just call sellers back. Like they would call me off of a postcard or call me off of the website or whatever. And I would just sit there and think and try to figure out what I was going to say for like 20 or 30 minutes before I would even get on the phone. And it was just debilitating almost. And I realized, like, you're going to sound silly. You're going to sound not very smart the first 100 calls, but it just takes repetition. It takes repetition, and you just have to practice. And, you know, putting yourself out there is better than just sitting and thinking about doing. Like, you're going to learn from what you do. The same is true whenever we switched over from single family and multifamily to storage. There is a different type of seller, a different type of conversation, different questions you need to ask. And I didn't figure that out without a lot of mistakes. There's a lot of silly conversations, and, you know, I didn't know what occupancy was at first. I didn't know what, you know, unit sizes and how to ask even how many there were, and any sort of like actual smart conversations to have with these sellers, because they're intelligent, right? They're not silly, and they're definitely there for a reason. I don't even know how I sometimes got people on the phone. I mean, I scored this lucky lady, so, you know, I got some sort of charm or something. But
so you two have come to the mastermind and plugged in immediately, and you understand how that works and begin networking and, you know, just gleaning and pulling information from the folks in the room. And that seemed to, from my stance, from my viewpoint, to really kind of catapulted you pretty quickly, you know, and elevated you pretty quickly to the next level. Is that fair to say, or, you know, describe your experience and what that looks like to be into network in a room of A players that are all running 100 plus miles an hour?
No, absolutely. I mean, for me, just like they always say, right? Your net work is your net worth, or your net worth is your network. And being around higher level players, you know, I would go to real estate meetups, I would go to local stuff, but a lot of these people are new, or the people that are doing a lot of deals aren't doing what I'm doing. And the fact that everybody is so willing to just share knowledge too, is just so, so different than any other industry that I've ever been in. Typically, it's a lot of cutthroat type stuff where people are just like, you talk about a lead, or you give them, you know, a little bit of information, or that you give them the address, and they'll go after your seller. And that's just not the case with the people in the room. That's not the case with storage in general, because I do believe that people just have an abundance mentality in the room. There's just so many abilities and opportunities for networking and just meeting the right people. If you don't have a skill set, somebody in that room does. The fact that I'm not very good at raising capital. Well, there's plenty of other people that are good at raising capital. I'm not good at operations. I found somebody that can help me operate the property. That was part of the biggest thing for me, was I know how to find deals, but what do I do afterwards? I get it under contract, I buy it. Okay, there's a whole lot of standard operating procedures that I don't know about afterwards, on answering phones, how to do collection calls. I didn't know any of that, but the fact that I can get into that room, I could talk with somebody and they can either manage my property or do the transition for me and help out and put someone who can do that and help me hire someone who can do all those things that I don't have the skill set to do.
I just think the people there are so, so giving and so nice. And, you know, they're not only there for business, but they are really friends. Like, I look forward to being able to go to the mastermind and see my friends and get to talk to them. Of course, you know, we have Zooms or phone calls, but really to be able to connect in person and be able to do fun activities at the mastermind and the dinners and everything and experience new adventures together. It's really such a blessing to be able in a room with all those people who are our friends, and we can give and exchange lots of information.
All by design, and it continues to get better and better as we add more quality folks like yourself. So here's a question I'd like to ask you both, and that is, so what's it like? Tell us maybe the pros and cons, if you want to, of a husband and wife partnership and doing business together.
Oh, I think there's, you know, obviously more pros than cons, but I love working with him, getting to just be unified in everything that we do, which also comes with a con. It just feels like at the dinner table, we're having to really make sure that our conversations, we don't let things seep in to other parts of our lives, and we're not having those work conversations. Oh, I need to send this email, you know, at the dinner table or on a date night, and really putting up those boundaries. So I feel like those are kind of the good pros and cons. What would you say, dear?
Yeah, no, I have a hard time shutting off. So for me, I just continually think about, like, we work from home, right? So it's one of those things where I'm in my office, but I step out, you know, typically I like to get away, or like, you know, most people, they have a drive or whatever, they come home and they can kind of decompress and relax on the way home or listen to music or a podcast. I don't have that. And so for me to just walk out that door and then have to go sit down at the dinner table and then like click my mind off on what I'm working on, so hard. And she does not like that all the time. She doesn't want to talk about, oh my gosh, this is the next best deal ever. Yeah, look what I found today, honey. She doesn't care at the time. She just wants to talk about, you know, heartfelt conversations or whatever's you know, going on at the time. So,
but a pro is that we're definitely like unified. Yeah,
yeah,
we can be unified. We always know. And, you know, we're on the same page all the time with pretty much everything, which
That's
is a really
true.
Big blessing. Yeah, it's not like you have to explain to your spouse what's going on with work. I like fully know.
I've been in different business groups where the gentleman, the male, the guy, just won't take anything home to his wife. He just won't share anything. And then she's always left wondering, or if an issue comes up, whether they're entrepreneurs or whether he's in corporate America, then it's like, well, why didn't you fill me in on this? And she genuinely wants to know. And there's other situations in which sometimes the spouse just doesn't want to know. It's just like, you know, I really don't care. You just show up and you be you. And as long as everything is good, I mean, I care about you and your work and what's going on, but I just don't want to be that intimately involved. For me, you know, I think for entrepreneurs, and again, speaking for myself, I think it's fantastic because the areas that Christina oversees, our areas, she's oversees the finances and the taxes, and you know, you can outsource that to some really good people, but nobody cares 1% as much about that piece of your business than your spouse, because they are directly tied to that piece of the business, which is the money that comes into the household. And so I'm very thankful for that, but that also does come at a cost as well, with some questions and times that may be a little bit challenging. And if they happen at 4 o'clock, then sometimes at 5 o'clock or 5:30 at the dinner table, well, it may not be as cordial of a conversation, but I wouldn't trade that for anything. And it is quite a blessing when, you know, God brings us a spouse that has complementary skills to us rather than either the same or completely opposing, where we're not on the same page. So that has worked out very well for us in our business and in our marriage.
Definitely a blessing, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Blessing in disguise.
Yep. So you've got 3 under your belt. You got three more coming right now in a time in which people are a little bit fearful, and clearly you've gotten over that right now. And especially, you know, people are looking into interest rates and inflation again. We're heading into an election year. And if you watch the news, yes, the world is falling apart. And, we all know that now is the time to begin moving forward. And that is where, you know, more millionaires are made in real estate, is during that recession. So what are you looking at right now as we head into the balance of this year? And again, whether people believe or think that we're in a recession or heading into one, or that we're going to skip over it, you know, let's talk about the phase of the economic cycle that we're heading into right now, which is a pullback. How are you two preparing for it?
So we are trying to preserve our own capital, trying to use other people's money, keep cash around, keep it heavy. We are trying to find properties that are either seller finance opportunities where we don't have to use the bank, or wholesaling, trying to wholesale some more. So that way we're just not holding. There is an opportunity cost of doing every single deal. Banks are, they're requiring more down. They're, you know, it's harder to make more deals pencil. But doing fewer, better deals is what we've been trying to do. So we're looking for like stuff that's got a good historic occupancy. You know, that they're full, that we can raise rents on. Not really looking for lease up opportunities, not looking for development opportunities, not looking for conversion stuff, at least at this point. Just because I would rather start with something that's already full, already cash flowing day one, that I don't have to worry about, that I can show to a banker and say, hey, look, this thing has been great property so far. I can do X, Y, and Z to it, raise value. I am changing my underwriting in the exit sale cap rate, for sure, to have a higher cap rate, and also in the lowering the LTV for the refi period, if that comes. A lot of people are banking on, oh well, rates are going to get lower. Well, that's not what the Fed is saying. They're saying they're going to keep them up there for a long time, and there's going to be some pain. There's going to be stuff that people won't like. There's going to be downsizing. There's going to be divorce. There's going to be hard times. And it's just one of those things where it's a cycle. I'm 24, so the last time I went through it, I was 9 years old. So this is my first rodeo, but I've done a ton of research just trying to prepare and get ready.
Catherine, would you answer that any differently or add to that?
This is his, like, baby. This is his ballpark, this recession. I mean, if you looked at his YouTube history, it would be all about, like, recession and trying to prepare. So this is what I'm leaving to him entirely. I trust him.
Well, I agree, Nick. This is, you know, right now we're seeing, you know, with interest rates being high, valuations are low, and our strategy is to begin to buy right now because, yes, they may stay high for a little while, but how long is a little while? I mean, 2-3 years, 4 years, we hold on and we make sure that we cover our debts and our, you know, our expenses are covered, and we make smart buys during this time. There's still value-add buys, but then when interest rates come down, we either refinance or that is the time to sell. And you know, that is a very bullish strategy that we are taking, an approach that we're taking. And so same thing, we keep our ear to the ground. We're always looking out on the horizon to predict as closely as possible with the economists that we follow and the help of some of the smarter folks in the mastermind that all are looking at the exact same thing to allow us all to continue to make those best decisions. But this is the time. We've been waiting for this. And so we've been licking our chops and yeah, we're moving forward.
Yeah, so this was a property that we have. I've got a full-time cold caller, and so she called up the seller. Seller answered, and he is 87 years old. He has been in storage for 30 years. He built it himself and then purchased two other self-storage facilities in the same town. So they are all within probably a mile of each other, very close. He runs them as one, Hasn't raised rates in forever. He only takes cash and check. no website, no technology whatsoever. I mean, this guy, he's 87 and he's still mowing the grass. And he's trying to take care of his wife who has dementia and Alzheimer's. So that's a full-time job within itself. She can hardly remember what she ate 5 minutes ago. And then he's having to drive an hour every single... he goes down there probably 3 times a week to go mow the lawn, cut locks, whatever it is. So there was quite a bit of pain there. He was wanting to retire and get out of it. And so initially... So the property is a total. There's 148 units. It's about 21,000 square foot or so. And he wanted about $1 million. So that really wasn't that good of a deal. I end up calling him and I go look at the property just because it's relatively close. It's 3 hours from my house. So I make a trip out of it. So we go, we have lunch. He shows me all the properties. And I call him back after he's given me some financials and I'm like, hey man, like this thing, it's not worth $1 million. Like I just can't pay that. He goes, I don't want $1 million. I go, oh, okay. What did you want? He goes, I wanted 750,000. Oh, okay. Well, let me rerun my numbers real quick. So I get off the phone real fast. And, I don't know, I think I got busy and, so then a couple days goes by and he calls me back and he goes, hey, Nick, I got another offer here. I got it. Okay. What is that? Well, I got it for $500,000. Oh, okay. I mean, is that even something that you consider? Yeah. Yeah. I consider 500,000. Okay. Well. Let me rerun my numbers. So I call him right back immediately. I say, Mr. Seller, would you be able to do, you know, if I could close this thing quickly, what if I could do $450,000? And he goes, no, I can't do that. I already got an offer for $500,000. I can't do that. I said, okay, what can you do? Well, I want $501,500. He wanted an extra $1,500 to beat that offer. That was it. And so at that point, I bought this thing. It was about 86% occupied. We got the contract on it, and it took several times of meeting over the course of this interaction. So I went out, had lunch with him, went back out. You know, this was multiple trips, and this is all about just relationship. Like I was almost like his grandson, you know, or great grandson at this point. You know, he's that old. So we ended up buying it at $23 a square foot. It needed a little bit of work, but we were able to spend $50,000 on it and get pretty much everything, had some doors, power washed, cleaned up, new signage, put it on a website. And so now it's been running pretty good. I mean, this guy, like, it was just one of those things where we just built up a relationship. And I really do think of him almost as like my grandpa. I mean, that's the way that I would just call him up. Hey, what's up? How are you doing? And we had a lot in common. That was another thing. Like, we didn't talk about the property a lot, you know. So whenever you're looking for deals, it's not about the property. Don't make it about the property. Figure out what the problems are. And you know, this guy, he told me a story. And back in the 70s and 80s, he lost everything. He was an equipment dealer and he literally went bankrupt and couldn't sell his house for 5 years. It sat on the market. It wouldn't sell. He grew up in Quincy, Illinois, where half of the population was a manufacturing town. So whenever the manufacturing went under, it went from 50,000 people to like 38,000 people. I mean, it lost close to half of the people and couldn't sell anything. So he remembered all that stuff. And, you know, of course, I haven't been around long enough to even remember that or anything. I wasn't born then, but just the fact that we just got along, talked about recession, talked about this, that, and the other. And so kind of fast forward to now, one of the things that you're going back to your original question was with the mastermind and helping out, Catherine East, she helped us with the transition, which is a contact that we had in the mastermind. That's exactly what she's good at, is transitioning facilities. And to be honest, couldn't do it without her. I just handed her over this thing, and she just got everybody on software, put it on, and you know, I'm looking for the next deal now. So
and David.
I know I can utilize other people's skills. What's that?
Oh, and David, we used him.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
He was able to help really make a difference with the bank and the broker.
Yes.
Given his BOV, worker opinion of value.
Uh-huh.
Really helpful.
Well, that's textbook. For anybody out there who doesn't think it's important to build a relationship with the seller, this is, once again, proof positive. People don't believe me when they're outside of this industry and I say how important it is to build that relationship, because what that does is being able to call them up or go and visit these owners. They do. They treat you. They're in some instances, it feels like they're marrying off their daughter when they're selling their facility, and they want to make sure that it's going to go to a worthy person who's going to either carry out their legacy or follow it or improve the property. And, you know, maybe there's things that he wanted to do that he didn't have the ability or the time, the resources to do, like adding a website or raising rates because he felt like he couldn't or those types of things. And there are many of these owners that have, if you build that relationship with them, they will go to bat for you because they see something in you. And all he was doing was he was almost acting like a broker, and he was helping you to get the highest bid because he wanted to sell it to you. And that only comes from building a relationship that clearly he didn't have with the other buyer, whoever that person, potential buyer, or the suitor of his facility. So that is just fantastic. And that is that's exactly what we look for is, again, many of these, what we call mom and pop facilities, that the value was created because they just kind of, they took their hands off the wheel, and they haven't raised rates in several years because they wanted to stay full, or they had a lot of folks in there that they didn't want to create a hardship for them in a town that maybe has struggled or suffered. And running things not by the book, but literally by a book, and not having software in place and taking cash and checks. You know, those are the types of facilities. So well done. Kudos to you. Nice job. Congratulations.
Appreciate it. And I didn't even mention, too, you know, the fact that we did get, whenever we bought it, we got an appraisal. So we bought it for $501,500. And as the as-is appraisal came back at $830,000. So going into it, you know, we had value. I thought, okay, this is a no-brainer. And then they did an after-repair appraisal after we do all the things that we said we were going to do. And the appraiser said it was going to be worth $1,050,000. So thought that wasn't too bad. You know, quick double your money. And, you know, I don't know if it's something that we want to hold on to long-term. It's a small town, but you do a 1031, flip it into something else bigger and roll it on to the next one.
Yeah, well, whatever that looks like, it's a good cash flowing property for now and a value add in the future, and a great way to start off when you're ahead of the game and building at least $300,000 to $500,000 in equity, even though it's on paper. That's a good place to be, a good position to be in when you're starting out, because then you can even leverage that, you know, with the lender as you go into the next one. No matter how you slice it, this is a great way of starting out. So well done, gang. So, Nick and Catherine, as we end our time together, and thank you so much for taking time out to share your experience and your case study and your first project here with Storage Nation. If you would, you know, share maybe a book that you two have either read together or individually that has made probably the most impact on your lives. It can be business or personal, either.
For me, I'll let you think because you read way more than me, but mine would be Get Out of Your Head by Jenny Allen. She's a Christian author, and I really love her books, especially that one. It just speaks a lot to fear and anxiety and how it really enters our life and how demonic forces are really at work all the time. And it's a constant spiritual warfare and how to protect our minds and souls.
The three ladies in our house are big fans of Jenny Allen. So, yeah, you have you have some good company there.
mine would probably be, I'd say, number one, the Bible. That has a lot of biblical advice and also business advice into it. But right now, I am actually rereading Think and Grow Rich. I read it a long time ago. And just the fact that, you know, it talks about the mastermind, the principles behind it. It talks about, like, literally just thinking everything into existence. That's been definitely a good one for sure. I've definitely forgotten a lot of the principles behind that. And so as I'm going through it, it's a very, very good refresher. So if you haven't read it, you know, I think that we all have here, but, or at least most people in the mastermind have, definitely recommend that one.
Yeah.
What were your statistics that you were telling me the other day about that book? Like how many times you read it?
Oh, there was it was Tim Bratz. So he's a big multifamily guy and he's got a mastermind. And one of the things that he had said was they took a raise of hands and a case study on how many times people read that book and what their net worth was. And it directly correlated with how many times they read that book. The more times they read that book, the more wealthy they were. So I was like, man, I heard that. I was like, I got to reread that thing.
Think and Grow Rich is, I've got maybe a dozen books that sit in a special place that's well at the top of my bookshelf. And those are the ones that I continue to pull from and go back and reread. And Think and Grow Rich is definitely one of them. I have it on audio, but it's not the same. I'm just a physical book reader in general. And that one's got all my notes from the first time when I read that book. And yeah, just absolutely an incredible book. And I would agree. I don't think you can read that too many times because I keep going back to it because I need to be reminded. And there's other things I pull out and they're situational. And I also echo the fact that, yeah, anything and everything you want to know about business, life, marriages, parenting, you know, and just about anything else is in the Bible. And that's another one that I read daily. So a good one as well. I agree.
Yep.
All right. Well, Nick and Catherine, appreciate you two rock stars. So thankful to have you on the podcast and share your case study and your approach to the business, your fearless desire to burn the ships and go after what you wanted. And just for your contributions. And we thank you so much also for your contributions on the mission field and coming down and building with us in Mexico and contributing in a big way with your resources, not just your time, but your finances as well to make that happen for some very deserving families. And looking forward to our next time together in the same room with the mastermind, but even more so our time together on the mission field again. So thanks once again, both of you, for your time and all that you do.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Bye, guys.
Hey, gang, wait. Three things before you leave. First, don't forget to follow the Self Storage Podcast and turn on your notifications so you never miss another episode. And while you're there, please leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. Second, be sure to share your favorite episodes and more via Instagram. And don't forget to tag us. And lastly, head to the links in the show description and hit follow on Twitter and Facebook to get a front row seat as we grow and scale our business and bring you along with us.